I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. In 2016, a third of respondents to a Wall Street Journal poll said they'd gotten into a heated argument at Thanksgiving with family or friends about the presidential election. In the unvaxxed world of 2020, many people spent Thanksgiving huddled by themselves avoiding a deadly virus. But this year, with vaccines and booster shots in plentiful supply, many American Thanksgiving tables will once again be full. Today on Midday, our annual Thanksgiving edition of Whatcha Got Cookin'. John Shields of Gertrude's Restaurant, Damian Mosley of Black Sauce Kitchen, and Debonette Wyatt of My Mama's Vegan Restaurant join me with tips to make your Thanksgiving feast festive. Call us or ping us online to share your favorite Thanksgiving tradition. Let's talk turkey after the news. And good afternoon, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. It's midday, and it is the sixth anniversary of the universally beloved Whatcha Got Cookin' Thanksgiving edition here on our program. Last Thanksgiving, the rule of thumb was cancel or keep it super small. COVID infections are once again on the rise, but lots of people, even those as young as five, have been vaccinated and boosted, so many more people are venturing back to the Thanksgiving table. Our mission here on Midday Today is simple. We've got three wonderful chefs at your disposal to share recipes and tips to help make your Thanksgiving dinner a delicious and memorable affair. John Shields is a chef and proprietor of Gertrude's Chesapeake Kitchen at the Baltimore Museum of Art. His latest book is The New Chesapeake Kitchen. Brother Shields, good to talk to you.
Hey, Tom, it's good to talk to you. I hadn't heard our theme song in a while, so it was great to hear it.
There you go. We're back. So happy Thanksgiving to you, sir. And Chef Damian Mosley is the creative spirit behind Black Sauce Kitchen, which you can find at the Waverly Farmers Market and at their storefront on 29th Street in Remington. Brother Mosley, good to have you as well.
Hey, thanks, Tom. I appreciate you having me on.
Sure, and happy Thanksgiving. A little later in the show, we'll check in with Debonette Wyatt of My Mama's Vegan. That's a new vegan restaurant on Greenmount Avenue here in Baltimore. So if you're not a turkey eater, we'll be showing you some love a little later. And speaking of My Mama's, we'll also check in with My Mama to find out what she's bringing to Thanksgiving with my rotten brother in Tennessee. Actually, I love my brother. And whatever you love about Thanksgiving, we'd love to hear about it. What are your family food traditions? Which of the 6 million ways to make cranberry sauce will you choose tomorrow? And who's coming to your house or whose house are you going to? And what COVID precautions will everybody be taking? So let's talk and let's share with each other the things that we love about Thanksgiving, culinary or otherwise. You can give us a call, 410-662-8780, our email, midday@wipr.org. You can tweet us at @midday_WIPR. So John and Damian, let me start before we start talking about food to talk about just a little bit about the restaurant and the food business, given the challenges that folks in your industry have faced during COVID. I mean, John, when it comes to labor shortages, finding enough people to staff Gertrude's, have you had challenges in that regard? We've heard that that's the case in a lot of places.
Yeah, that's the case in just about every place that I know. And yeah, we still are struggling with that. We're doing a little bit better. And so we're open about 5 days now. Hours are reduced. But yeah, it's been a challenge. Right now, it's just a challenge to get enough people to put a whole team together. But the team we got is great. And we're having a good time.
And Damian, how about you with Black Sauce? I mean, I've noticed some new faces at the farmer's market and at your place on 29th Street in the last few weeks. In terms of, you know, finding people to staff what you're doing, how's that going?
It's definitely been tough for us, too. We have one incredible luxury we've had is we've been able to turn to people who used to work full time with us. And kind of plug them back in, invite them back in. And they've been very gracious to come and work sometimes at the market, sometimes at the shop. And it's great, especially just because the chemistry with those folks is tremendous. But finding new folks, especially new folks that fit in with your team, new folks who understand just how hard we work in the industry as a whole and in Black Sauce specifically, that's tough.
Yeah, sure. And John, I know that you're doing takeout Thanksgiving. You're preparing Thanksgiving meals for folks, and they're going to come pick them up. Are they picking them up today? Are they picking them up tomorrow? How's that going? How's business?
Oh my God. They're picking it up today and tomorrow. We start pickups are at 2 o'clock to 6 today and then 9 to noon tomorrow. And yeah, we sold out. I mean, we sold out like about 5 days before the original cutoff date was. And, you know, it was funny because I wasn't sure what to expect this year. You know, I wasn't even sure, you know, since, you know, we're got a little semi-lull in the pandemic, what would people do? But my God, they, you know, people really wanted to do it. And the interesting thing is, like, you know, our meals are all for four. And last year, most of them were for four because we were all having small gatherings. But this year, people are ordering three of the meals for four. So obviously, they're having 12 people or eight people. So that was interesting to see. And I hadn't specifically expected that.
Yeah. And Damien, when I checked out your website yesterday, and I haven't looked this morning, but yesterday, as of yesterday, you only had a couple of items that were still available. You had some mac and cheese and some oyster dressing. But it looks like your turkey selection is no longer available as well. Is that right?
That is right. Kind of like John, I also didn't know what to expect. I think that for us, we tried to go heavier on sides because so many people want to do turkey for themselves. And yeah, biscuits were the first thing to go.
Sure.
We re-upped and put some more in inventory, and I think they flew right back into people's shopping carts. So it's been tough to keep it stocked up.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, biscuits is, you know, a fundamental part of what you offer. They're just so delicious. They're incredible. Let's talk a little bit about turkey. And listeners, by the way, again, love to hear from you. What are you cooking tomorrow? How are you doing your turkey? How many people are you having? You're going to eat outside. You're going to eat inside. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. And you can tweet us at @midday WYPR. So John, for first timers, for folks who are making their first turkey, or perhaps folks who are making a turkey for the first time in a long time, give us some general guidelines, some things that folks want to, some pitfalls people might want to avoid, and some things that, you know, they should be thinking of before the big day tomorrow.
All right. Well, first thing is your turkey. Your turkey, what you're getting. Hopefully you already got your turkey. But like my friend Eileen, we went looking for turkeys for her. And unfortunately, she got a turkey that was too big, I think a little too big for the oven and too big for her to even carry. So make sure that you can handle the bird. First things first. Generally, you want to get the turkey not 100% down to room temperature, but get it out of the refrigerator a little earlier before you actually put it in the oven. That just helps it cook internally. Then you have the idea, do you brine? Do you not brine? Obviously, you should have already gotten the brine going if you wanted to do that. And that's usually just some salted water. And we put cloves and fresh thyme and bay leaves. It just sometimes helps to make the turkey a little bit more moist. But bottom line is, you know, when you're ready to go, dry the turkey off. You could, you know, make a little herbs butter, you know, some softened butter with a garlic and thyme and rosemary shallots. And we put it under the skin of the turkey, like on the top of it, you put your finger in between. Then I generally start the oven at like about 400. And then I put the turkey in and I immediately turn it down to 325. And you want to then, you know, kind of do a slow roast on that. And it takes about 15, 16 minutes per pound for an unstuffed turkey. When your turkey is done, you know, you want an internal temperature of about 165. I put a little tent, aluminum foil tent on it when I take it out. Let it sit for at least 10, 15 minutes or more before you carve it, and it'll be much easier to carve. So that's just the basics of the turkey thing.
Yeah, good advice. And Damien, one of the great treats of black sauce, and I try to treat myself every Saturday morning after I go to the farmer's market, is that you have a different kind of meat or poultry or vegetable that you are featuring in your incredible biscuits. So, you know, sometimes it's a flank steak, another time it would be a lamb thing, another time chicken. When it comes to turkey, are there particular qualities of that, of a turkey bird that is, you know, that you are always conscious of when you're preparing it, whether you're, you know, however you're cooking it, and I know you cook it a number of different ways for different variations on the theme that you have with your biscuits. But when you think about cooking turkeys, what comes to mind first?
So the first thing that comes to mind for me is that is the size thing. You know, a turkey is a big bird. It requires a big pan, and it requires some time to cook it. So while this is probably the least safe, the most dangerous way to cook a turkey, I actually prefer to fry a turkey. Because then what that allows me to do is free up my oven for all the other things that I want to cook. Because I'd like for everything to kind of come to the table hot and to be finished around the same time. The only way I've been able to figure to do that with a turkey is to cook it outside somewhere. What I like about frying a turkey, as opposed to say smoking it or cooking it on the grill, is that it takes a lot less time. If you do it well, it develops a beautiful, beautiful color. And because you cook it quickly, I think it stays much juicier, much more tender, much more succulent. Mm-hmm. So that's my favorite thing to do.
But you do have to be careful, because you're always reading stories the day after Thanksgiving of, you know, people who've burned down their garage because they were frying turkey in the driveway.
If you're gonna fry it, you need to do some research, and you need to have the right equipment in place too.
Matthew in Oakenshaw sends us an email, says, a friend of mine alerted me to this way of roasting a turkey, doing it upside down so that it's always moist and juicy. For the first 3/4 of the roasting time, set the turkey upside down on a dense bed of cut up onions, carrots, etc. Baste it normally, and for the last quarter of the cooking time, turn it right side up so that the skin browns. Again, baste as normal, and he says it really works. I don't know, John, what do you think? Do you put it in upside down or right side up?
Well, it does. I mean, you know, if you have like a 25-pound turkey, that's a little, you know, it can be a little tricky for it to stay the way you want it to stay. But my sister, Patricia, did this before, and she did it because she had read about the upside down thing. And it worked beautifully. The idea, you know, one of the problems when we're roasting turkeys, it takes a long time. And for all the meat to get cooked all the way through, the problem is drying out the breasts of the turkey. So by turning it over, it's not getting that direct heat, and some of the fat is dripping down into the breast. So it really is. If you can navigate, you know, turning it upside down and keeping it from wobbling right to left too much, it can work really, really well.
The firm IRI, Information Resources, Inc., tells us that overall the supply of turkeys is pretty strong. So there will not be a shortage of turkeys, or there hasn't been a shortage, at least heretofore. In October of this year, turkey sales were up 200% compared to last year at this time. And turkey prices per pound were actually a little bit below the historical average in October. And I remember seeing Jen Psaki yesterday in the White House briefing room saying that their information was that turkeys, a 20-pound turkey would cost about a dollar more this year than last year. They're concerned about inflation in a number of areas, gas prices, et cetera. But she seemed to think that turkey prices were relatively stable. So we will talk more about how you're cooking your turkeys and what else you're serving with it. We're going to talk to Damian Mosley about his incredible biscuits. He is the proprietor of Black Sauce Kitchen. It is easy to find at the Waverly Farmers Market. It's the place with the huge line that's stringing across the market. And they've also got a storefront and kitchen on 29th Street in Remington. And Damian, are you also at the Farmers Market under the expressway on Sundays?
We have not returned down there since the start of the pandemic.
Is Waverly the only market that you're at now, or is there one I'm missing?
Nope, it's just Waverly.
Yeah, okay, so Waverly and 29th Street. And John Shields is a chef and author of several cookbooks, the latest of which is called The New Chesapeake Kitchen. He's also the host of Coastal Cooking and Chesapeake Bay Cooking on Maryland Public Television and PBS, and he is the proprietor of Gertrude's Restaurant at the Baltimore Museum of Art. We will take more of your calls and comments when we come back from a quick break. 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org to tweet us at @MiddayWYPR. And by the way, a reminder that the Y of Central Maryland's annual Turkey Trot Charity 5K is happening again tomorrow. You can run it, you can walk it, you will enjoy it either way, and you'll help the Y provide meals and services to folks throughout Central Maryland. We've got a link to sign up on our website, wypr.org/midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow at this hour, it's Turkey Confidential with Francis Lamb of The Splendid Table and a bunch of really cool guests. So that's tomorrow at noon. If you're just joining us, rather, today here on Midday, it's our Thanksgiving edition of What You Got Cooking. Chef John Shields of Gertrude's Chesapeake Kitchen and Chef Damian Mosley of Black Sauce Kitchen are here to take your questions and comments to help you through any and all culinary quandaries ahead of tomorrow's celebration. To join us, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, and you can tweet us @MiddayWYPR. So, Damian Mosley, I do want to ask you about the biscuits at Black Sauce Kitchen, which are just out of this world. They are heavenly. They are a delight. They are a blessing. They are phenomenal. and I've got the empirical data to show, because I've been going every Saturday now for quite some time and getting them. I mean, your philosophy about biscuits and I mean, obviously you can't give us the secret recipe, but what are the things that you really pay attention to that creates such a phenomenally successful biscuit?
I think the most important thing about that philosophy is I believe you have to make them that day. And I think once they cool down, they turn into something different. It doesn't mean you couldn't reheat a biscuit, but we're not in the business of selling biscuits we made the day before. So it means for an early morning, if we're going to a farmer's market that starts at 7. I think the second thing for biscuits is that no matter how many recipes you read, learning how to make them really is more of a tactile thing, where you can feel a biscuit dough and feel if you kneaded it too much or worked it too much. You can feel if it's a little bit too wet. And so it's really a tactile thing in terms of getting your fat, in our case, butter. In other people's case, maybe they're using lard or beef tallow or whatever, but getting your fat to be the right size as you incorporate it into your dry ingredients, and then putting just the right amount of liquid in at just the right time. All of that is something that's experiential. You learn over time by actually doing it, not reading about it. And then I think it's a tactile thing. It's about touch and feel and memory.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and experience. I mean, you really just have to do it a few times. And John, I mean, you know, cooking really is so much about experience. It is, as Damien says, a very tactile endeavor. And there are just things that you pick up by repetition doing things. I mean, when people think about the common mistakes that people make at Thanksgiving, one of the ones that people worry about is making the mashed potatoes too gluey, you know, the consistency of mashed potatoes. Any tricks in that regard when you're mashing a potato? I made some a couple of weeks ago, and I just, for whatever reason, I hit it out of the park. They were just delicious. I served it. I was making a butterflied lamb that I got from Andy's farm at the farmer's market in Waverly that I put on the grill, and I made these mashed potatoes. I had fresh chives from my garden, and I for some reason, they just came out really, really well, and I'm not exactly sure what I did any differently than other times, but what are the thing with a standard side like that? What do you think?
Well, for me, one of the things I do with the potatoes is I don't really cut them much before I boil them. I like to have the least surface of the potato being hit by water because they get a little too mushy. I learned from some of my cousins when I was in Ireland, they actually, to make their mashed potatoes, they cook them in the jackets first. And when they come out, they let them cool just a touch, and they use their fingers to take off the skins, and then they mash from there. And I found that they are like the fluffiest, nicest mashed potatoes I've ever had, because you don't have all that water content in there, and they're not getting, all sticky and nasty. So again, if you have a big potato, I would just suggest the most I would cut that into is half or quarters at the very most. But a smaller potato, you can just cook the whole thing in the water and then mash it from there, and it'll be really delightful. It changes the entire structure and texture of your bowl of mashed potatoes.
That sounds like a great suggestion to save the day when it comes to the mashed potatoes. We've got an email from Gwen in Catonsville, who says, I have an oven that can roast and bake convected or normally. So what's the difference in cooking times and temperature, and what should I choose for a 14-pound turkey? Damien, you want to take a stab at that one? Convection or regular baking? What do you think?
I prefer convection. So essentially what's happening then is that there's a fan in the oven and it's circulating the heat. As opposed to conventional, where there's some sort of a heat element that's kind of glowing at the bottom of the oven, and all of the heat is bottom heat. Conventional ovens cook most things unevenly. So I really like an oven that's got a convection feature. I prefer convection, but then if you're using convection and that's something new for you, you just have to be careful, because it will brown the turkey really quickly. And your cooking time might be a little bit less, and your temperature might be able to be lowered just a little bit if you're using convection.
All right, good to keep in mind if you are going to go the convection route. We got a couple of calls, but before we get to those calls, I want to get to a caller from Tennessee, outside Oak Ridge, Tennessee. It's my mom. She has been on our show, our pre-Thanksgiving special, several times. Mom, happy Thanksgiving. It's good to talk to you.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you so much, and happy Thanksgiving to all of your listeners.
And happy Thanksgiving to you. Good to hear yours, as always. So you're at my rotten brother Bill's house outside of Oak Ridge, Tennessee. And Bill is a good cook himself, and his wife, Stacy, a terrific cook. So I know you guys are going to have a big feast. But what are you making for the festivities in Tennessee?
Well, I'm going to try a new hors d'oeuvre, and I'm going to try it on them tonight. I defrosted some puff pastry. I took two sheets and I cut them into 9 squares. So I've got 18 squares. Put them into a mini muffin tin. Put a little dab of brie and then a spoonful of cranberry sauce. And the cranberry sauce that I made, it's a recipe that you gave me. Got a little touch of horseradish and Dijon mustard. I'm going to bake these at 400 for about 10 minutes, and it's supposed to come out looking beautiful and taste even better. So I'm going to try that tonight.
Well, that sounds great.
It's easy, and it's pretty, and I think it's tasty. So thank you for having me on.
Well, good deal. Always good to talk to you, Mom. I appreciate it. I love you, and give my love to the rest of the fam whom you're with
today. I will.
Today.
Love from the fam. I love you too, Tom.
Okay.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Mom. Take care. Let's go to the phones to Margaret, who's calling from Baltimore. Hi, Margaret. Welcome to Midday, and happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you and your guests. I have a question about fresh turkey. Having never had one, my partner brought home a fresh turkey, and I knew nothing about it. It was purchased on Sunday. It was partially frozen in spots from being stored in the supermarket. It is not a frozen turkey. And I don't know. How do you know if it's still good Thursday?
I don't know. John, what do you think?
Well, generally what you want to do, and you have plenty of time right now, if you think it's just a little bit frozen here and there, just leave it in the refrigerator overnight, and it'll be defrosted by tomorrow. But often, if you get a frozen turkey, you need to leave it in the refrigerator for maybe 4 or 5 days in advance just to get it defrosted, because it's so, you know, it's so dense. But you should be fine with if it's a fresh turkey and just a little bit of that. Leave it in the refrigerator overnight now, and then tomorrow take it out. I would take it out about 45 minutes or so before I was going to get ready to prepare it, just to let it come a little bit down to a room temperature. But it should be fine.
It's been in the fridge since Sunday.
So if it's been in the fridge since Sunday, you should be good to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're good to go. Okay. Sure. Happy Thanksgiving, Margaret. I appreciate it. Martha Stewart, of all people, I happen to read, suggests soaking a clean T-shirt in a mixture of butter and wine and putting it on top of the turkey breast and then put it in the oven with the T-shirt on. Now, the T-shirts that I wear that are soaked in a mixture of butter and wine are because I'm wearing them, you know, and then they end up getting soaked. But that's it. But she says purposely soak a clean T-shirt in a mixture of butter and wine, put it on the turkey, and then put it in the oven, and this will make sure that the turkey, the breast, doesn't dry out quickly. Damien, how does that strike you? It strikes me as weird as it can be.
Yeah, I'd be a little terrified to do that, I believe.
Yeah.
I've never heard anything like that. And I also have PTSD off of fire, so I'm not trying to put fabric in my oven.
Yeah, that's right. You did have a very bad experience with that, in fact, with Black Sauce Kitchen. Yeah, I would keep the clothes in the closet, not in the oven. Let's go to Steven. He's on the line from Easton. Welcome. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you and your guests.
Thanks. So how do you do your turkey?
Well, I've been a professional chef for over 40 years, and what we do is, first of all, we always brine our turkeys. And then we cook them, we separate the thighs and legs from the breast and cook them separately.
So you're cooking things separately, huh?
Yep, and if I can make a suggestion about mashed potatoes, we double boil our potatoes, bring them to a boil once, rinse off the starch, and then finish them off with another boil. Never come out tasty.
Good. All right, well, thanks for that. Those suggestions, I appreciate it. And John Shields, when it comes to cranberry sauce for you, there are, it seems to me, you know, 10 million different ways of making cranberry sauce. And I understand from Instacart, who took a survey, that people in the following states, Mississippi, Rhode Island, New Hampshire, Alabama, and New Jersey, prefer canned cranberry sauce to fresh cranberry sauce. As opposed to the good people of Iowa, South Dakota, Nebraska, Minnesota, and Oregon. They're the top five states that prefer fresh cranberry sauce. That Thank God I don't work for a company that makes you do that kind of poll. But when it comes to cranberry sauce, John, what are your general principles and how do you do it? As my mom mentioned, I do a cranberry sauce with a little horseradish and some Dijon mustard and some sugar, and it's pretty delicious, I must say.
Yeah, well, you notice they didn't mention Maryland on either side
of
that.
Who knows where we are? Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you have many people that I grew up with, and, you know, they wouldn't eat anything that wasn't canned cranberry because they don't think that that's real. And people are a little intimidated sometimes about cranberry sauce because they think it has to be made in a factory and go into a can. But it does not. It's such a simple thing to do. And it's like so many recipes, you know, classic recipes that you can make a signature recipe for your own. So, for instance, if you get a bag of cranberries, they're 12 ounces, and you just rinse them off, and in a saucepan, you put that. And basic ratio is about 1 cup of sugar and 1 cup of water or liquid. So what I do is I usually use orange juice in place of the water. And then I take grated orange zest and I put that in. And I generally mince some fresh ginger. So I bring that all to a boil. And then it only takes about 10 minutes, 5-10 minutes to cook. You take it off of the stove and you're done. It's done. You got your cranberry sauce done for the next day.
It's What You Got Cooking here on Midday. We're going to take a quick break, and then we will have more with Chef Damian Mosley of Black Sauce Kitchen and Chef John Shields of Gertrude's Chesapeake Kitchen at the Baltimore Museum of Art. We're also going to meet Debonette Wyatt. She is the new owner and chef at My Mama's Vegan. That's a new vegan restaurant on Greenmount Avenue here in Baltimore. You can join our conversation and share your Thanksgiving traditions with us here on Midday. 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org, our Twitter handle @MiddayWYPR. And this note about some musical happenings at Andy Musique, the performance venue in Baltimore's Mount Vernon neighborhood. The John Lampkin Quintet will play a set Friday night. TK Blue and the Mentors Trio will play a Saturday night set. And on Sunday afternoon and evening, the Eric Bird Trio will play a Charlie Brown Christmas. It's a great show for families. You need to be vaccinated to attend in person, and you can stream all of these shows as well. We've got a link to information at WYPR.org/midday, but Andy Musique, great place to hang out on this Thanksgiving weekend. I'm Tom Hall. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
You're listening to your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. I'm Tom Hall. If you're just joining us, it's the What You Got Cookin' Thanksgiving edition here on Midday. Chef Damian Mosley of Black Sauce Kitchen is with us. Chef John Shields of Gertrude's Chesapeake Kitchen at the BMA is here as well. And I am pleased to welcome Debonette Wyatt. She is the new owner and chef at My Mama's Vegan, a vegan restaurant on Greenmount Avenue here in Baltimore. Debonette, happy Thanksgiving. Welcome.
Happy Thanksgiving to you all. Thank you so much for having me.
So tell us about your restaurant. What's behind, why did you decide to open it? What kind of stuff do you serve? And, you know, give us the skinny on My Mama's Vegan.
Okay. So we are, as you said, we're 100% vegan carryout, and we really specialize in comfort food. And it all got started because I had made some diet changes to my own diet. You know, just wanting to eat a little bit healthier, do a little bit more plant-based. And what I found is that I could make all of the foods I really enjoy, I can veganize them. And so what's happened is we've become a great bridge for those who would like to try vegan food, but they don't want to give up some of the things that they really enjoy. So we do a lot of like burgers and cheesesteaks. Our fried cauliflower bites are like a big thing for us. We do cheesesteak, we do tacos. And so, you know, we're not a food that you would eat every day, but every now and then you want a burger. So you can have a vegan burger. You have a plant-based burger. You know, every now and then you want a cheesesteak. You can have a plant-based cheesesteak. So we really do specialize in making really good, fun food, but we just make it vegan, mm-hmm. make it from plants.
Like, tell us how you prepare the cauliflower bites, for example, or a cauliflower taco I know you have on your menu. How do you prepare those?
So cauliflower bites are pretty much prepared like you would prepare fried chicken wings. You know, so they're battered. We have about 7 different sauces that we toss them in. You can choose from like a mango habanero, a buffalo, a Thai chili. You can have them plain. You can have a solid gold, which is a mustard. You can have jerk cauliflower wings. So just think of, you know, your fried wings, and we prepare them the same way, but with cauliflower.
Yeah, it sounds delicious. Damien Mosley, at Black Sauce, there are often at least vegetarian options for the biscuits. As I mentioned before, you know, sometimes each week you'll feature a different meat or poultry that you put on the biscuit. But the last couple of months, I think once or twice I've had a thing where you do roasted pears and onions on the biscuit, and it's just delicious. I wonder, what is the demand in your restaurant and at the markets for vegetarian or vegan options?
The demand in the restaurant is a little bit lower, but at Waverly, generally speaking, we regularly sell out of whatever the vegetarian option is. People really appreciate it. I think it's easy to be lazy when doing vegetarian food, and that's not part of how we go about it. So I think people really appreciate what we put into those options, and at Waverly especially, those options kind of fly. And then the other thing is that for catering, it's really not a complete menu. You know, you're not thinking about your entire audience if you're not considering people who don't eat meat. And so every catering, there's going to be vegetarian and vegan options.
Yeah, and John Shields, Axios magazine did a poll, and I think they talked to some people at Whole Foods who had done some research, saying as many as 58% of Americans had people who follow a special diet sometime in the past year, whether it's vegan, vegetarian, perhaps. And Whole Foods offers a vegan meal for two people, and they regularly sell out in a lot of their locations. Is that the case at Gertrude's? Do you find a lot of interest in the vegetarian options in the restaurant?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's pretty amazing the number of people that come in and specifically are asking for vegan items or vegetarian items. And so I incorporated that also because of some health concerns that I had years ago into what we do at Gertrude. So there's always vegan offerings. And generally when we do like 5-course dinners or something for special events, I always have a complete course of vegan options, you know, and it's an easy thing. Generally it can be a very, very easy thing to do. And people are so appreciative of it. They really are. So I try to be really mindful of that. And actually my last book, The New Chesapeake Kitchen, is looking at how we can look at more of a plant forward approach to our Chesapeake kitchens for the 21st century. You know, it's just good for our health, good for the health of the Bay, and good for our local food economy.
Sure. And Debonette Wyatt, what's Thanksgiving like for you? I mean, when you're eating a vegan Thanksgiving, what do you have on the menu, and how do you prepare some of the stuff?
So right now, I'm in the midst of finishing up our catering orders. We actually have, we do yams, of course, like everyone else. You know, we just use some different ingredients. We have collard greens. We have our stuffing. We have, because of meat alternatives, we're able to have, you know, stuffing with sausage. We even have a soy turkey, have meatless roast. So we really can still have a traditional vegan family meal, but just with other meat alternatives. You know, we still can have a turkey. It's just not a turkey. You know, we still can have roast. It's just not of an animal. And we still can have all of our sides, string beans, collard greens, garlic mashed potatoes, mac and cheese, you know, we don't miss any sides. We don't miss anything, really.
Mm-hmm. And like mac and cheese, what's your secret to mac and cheese?
The secret is, okay, and the other thing is, because I am a vegetarian and I've just become a vegetarian, I've eaten these foods, you know, meat and dairy all my entire life. So for me to be able to, I still want it to taste like it tasted when I enjoyed dairy, you know what I mean? And when I enjoyed meat. So the secret to our mac and cheese is we use about 5 different vegan mac cheeses, you know, plant-based have come a long way where we have switches, we have feta, we have mozzarella, we have so many different various cheeses that we can now do a vegan five cheese macaroni and cheese. And the secret is keeping.
Oh, great. So we're having a little trouble with the line. We're going to try to reconnect and improve that. But Damian Mosley, I know you offer mac and cheese as well. Mac and cheese is such a favorite of mine. And what are your overall recommendations for how to approach mac and cheese in perhaps a more traditional way than Debonette's doing it when she's, you know, she's looking to a vegan slant?
It's funny, we've had several conversations about mac and cheese in the kitchen just this week, and I think we always do this time of year, but one thing that most of us are in agreement about is that we don't like eggs in our mac and cheese, so we instead make a version that's got a that starts with a roux, and then you put your half and half, which is generally what we use, into your roux, and which is called a bechamel, and so we kind of make that cream sauce and then pour that over macaroni elbows and, you know, a few different kinds of cheese, and then we bake it.
But the roux sounds to me like it's a very important step in this enterprise.
It is. I mean, I think that's the way that we bind it, instead of using things like eggs, and as well as a lot of people use heavy cream. Both of those make mac and cheese a little too rich for my taste.
And John Shields, I want to ask you about a recipe that you suggested to us last year, and we're going to post on the website this year again, champagne cabbage and apples. Quickly tell us about how you approach that.
Yeah, well, it sounds really swanky, but if you read down the ingredients list, it's really sauerkraut. So you're taking sauerkraut, fresh sauerkraut, and rinsing it in cold water several times to take out the real heavy acidity, but you still want a little bit of bite. And then basically I'm just sauteing things in butter or olive oil, whatever you want, like onions and ginger and garlic, and then taking some tart apples and the slices of those, tossing those all together with those things that have been cooked in the butter. Then you put that all together with the sauerkraut, and you put it in a pot or a crock or whatever. You can cook it on top of the stove, or you could put it in the oven. And I use like a couple of cups of dry champagne or a cava to be the braising liquid for that. If you don't like champagne, you could use some apple cider, either one. It just turns into this wonderful kind of dish that people who always say, I don't like sauerkraut, absolutely love.
Oh, sounds really good. And you're, of course, going to have the Krautfest again in January at Gertrude's, and you can check out the website for that. So, Debonette, you were an executive with Macy's for the longest time, and then you decided to leave that career and open a vegan restaurant. Talk about that journey and how that evolution came to be.
It's funny because, you know, when I was at Macy's, stress, I had gained a lot of weight just from the stress and the late hours. And, you know, I just was like, I'm over this place. So I started eating better. I started eating a lot of fish and greens and stuff like that. And as I was changing my diet, I started doing a lot of research about various foods and what they do to us. So one day, you know, I had enough and I walked into Macy's and I said, I'm giving my notice. at my job was like, I don't think they're really surprised. I still kept doing my job very, very well. But you kind of know when someone is like, okay, I'm done. So I was like, now, you know, my husband's going to go, well, what are you going to do now? So I started meal prepping. I started doing meal prep out of my house. So after doing meal prepping, I was offered an opportunity with another business they had opened up called Juice Work. So we shared a kitchen space. And at that time, my menu consisted of, you know, chicken and fish and salmon. And probably it might have been about 20%. I had a small vegan selection, which was like a black bean burger and maybe cauliflower bites. It was very, very small. Then the pandemic happened. And what happened is I had a lot of people started asking me for more vegetarian and vegan options. So I started a ghost kitchen on Grubhub called My Mama's Vegan. And I did an extensive menu on Grubhub. So it was delivery only. You cannot come into the location. And what happened was my other business, Something Fresh Goods, went out of business. And My Mama's Vegan just took off. And then the pandemic happened. So the pandemic happened, you know, a lot of restaurants we had to close down, or we just had to find other ways, you know, in order to make our money. We could not, you know, so a lot of times we wound up switching over to delivery, which I was already doing delivery. So My Mama's Vegan just happened to just, it blew up like in a matter of months. So within 6 months, I was able to get my own location on Greenmount Avenue and become My Mama's Vegan, carry out and delivery. So I no longer just did the ghost kitchen on Grubhub, DoorDash, and Uber Eats. I was actually able to open up a to open up my own location.
One step at a time. That's terrific. Debonette Wyatt, she is the chef and owner of My Mama's Vegan. It's in the 2900 block of Greenmount Avenue in Waverly here in Baltimore. It's just up the street from the farmer's market. So Debonette, thank you for your time. I know this is a very busy day for all of you folks, and I just really am grateful to you for joining us. Thanks, and happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you so much for having us.
Damien Mosley is the animating force behind Black Sauce Kitchen. They've got a storefront on 29th Street, and you can also catch them at the Waverly Farmers Market on Saturday mornings. Damien, happy Thanksgiving to you. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. I'll see you soon.
And John Shields of Gertrude's Chesapeake Kitchen at the BMA. He's the chef and author of the new Chesapeake Kitchen. He also hosts Coastal Cooking and Chesapeake Bay Cooking on Maryland Public Television and PBS. Thanks, John. I'll see you and Damien at the Farmers Market on Saturday.
All right. Thanks, Tom. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you as well to you. Future City is up next after the news. And tomorrow at this hour, we will bring you NPR's Turkey Confidential, and on Friday, we'll rebroadcast my conversation with the New York Times journalists Cecilia Kang and Shira Frankel about their explosive book, An Ugly Truth, Inside Facebook's Battle for Domination. That's on the way Friday. And before we leave you today, a few words of thanks in this season of Thanksgiving. I am very thankful for the team that I work with here at Midday, our producers Rob Sivak and Mallory Pinkert-Pierre, our director and engineer Luke Spicknell, our digital producer Jamila Kremple, and Austin Coughlin at Clean Cuts. He writes our theme music. Thanks also to our chief engineer, Ray Heppner, WYPR's executive director for news, Danielle Irby, and my buddies on the WYPR news team, and my good friends Aaron Henkin, Matt Taka, and Nathan Sterner. I'm also grateful and thankful that the WYPR family now includes our talented friends at WTMD. It is the best music station in town, and we are delighted and proud to be working with the folks at WTMD. And I appreciate you, your questions, your comments, your perspective, and your concern for the future of our city and the future of our country, your engagement with the issues, and your openness to the panoply of ideas that we try to bring you each day. Thanks for being part of the Midday community of listeners. Every day, our team cherishes the opportunity you let us have to help shape in our small way the conversation about our democracy, the challenges we face, and the things that animate and illuminate our lives. That opportunity is a blessing and a gift. You are a blessing and a gift. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks. From all of us at WYPR, we wish you and yours a safe and happy Thanksgiving. Thank you.
You're listening to your NPR News station, member supported 88.1 WYPR.